Hello, everyone. It's Kelly with the Truth Teller Course and with Women for One. And welcome to this powerful audio recording bonus that I promised you with one of my mentors and just an incredible human being that's committed to helping the world and helping human beings and humanity transform themselves through this journey that they take at looking at who they are, getting real, getting truthful. So I'd like to welcome Barnett Bain. Welcome, Barnett.
I am so glad to be here with you, Kelly, and all of our listeners.
I'm really, really excited to have you here to discuss this story concept. And, you know, our truth tellers, the women and men that have signed up for this course have signed up because they're committed to diving into their own experiences and stories in order to come out the other end and transform themselves. And to go on this journey of transformation takes a lot of courage. So I really am excited to talk to you about your experience with the book you've written and your personal wisdom as well. So for those of you that have not heard of Barnett Bain, he is, first of all, an incredible human being and a dad, which I love. And he's an award-winning filmmaker. He also is a radio broadcaster with the radio show Cutting Edge Consciousness that I have been a guest on as well. And he's an author of a current book called The Book of Doing and Being, which I just love. It's about creativity. And then also of a book that I took a lot of concepts from and personally learned and transform myself with, which is called The Third Story, Awakening the Love That Transforms. You also might know him because he is the producer of What Dreams May Come, which is he's an Oscar winner, an Emmy Award nominee, and also a writer and producer of The Celestine Prophecy. And he's currently working on Milton's Secret and producing that as well. So I'm really honored to have you here to talk about this really incredibly transformative issue. It's not even an issue. It's a subject around how we look at our stories and experiences and how we transform ourselves through this. So Barnett, let's just start first with, can you talk to us a little bit about why you wanted to write the book, The Third Story, and your experience of how looking at our stories from different angles and diving into our experiences and truth transforms all of us?
Well, it began because I came to recognize patterns in myself. I had a deep desire to make certain kinds of changes in my life. And I wondered why, as hard as I worked, that there were limits and limitations to the kinds of changes that I could make. And I began to wonder if the kinds of changes that I was desiring, if they themselves were a part of the issue, part of what I was wanting and hoping to overcome. I'll make that a little clearer. It became increasingly apparent to me that the kinds of desires that I had for myself were developmental desires. And by that I mean that we grow in a number of different ways. Some of the ways that we grow are out of our own searching and discovering and learning. And some of the ways that we grow are what I call developmental, meaning they are pre-programmed in. In the same way that a rose blooms because it is programmed in at a certain time and a certain cadence at a certain season to bloom. And so we are both pre-programmed and we are also pre-programmed in with our own personal destinies. And that's a paradox. That is something that is beyond our developmental minds to handle. We are much more comfortable in terms of our own thinking, much more comfortable with absolute ideas and guarantees and logic and reason and facts Those are the basis of what we call stories. Our stories are a desire to make sense of disparate ideas, and we string them together, and we make sense of ourselves and our world by stringing them together with certain assumptions. Some of them we even call facts. Some of them seem to be facts. They make up stories, but they live inside of a structure called logic and called reason that makes sense to a developmental mindset. So as I began to look at that, and I began to see where I placed myself along inside of that, I thought I could look back and see a point in my life when my focus was about, am I getting enough? As a very, very small boy, as a baby, am I getting enough mother love? Am I getting enough food? Am I getting enough emotional attunement? Am I getting enough sense of safety, of warmth? Is my diaper being changed? Am I getting enough? Am I getting enough? And if I was not getting enough, I would experience distress. So I could see that my life, my earliest stages, were largely focused on that, and that never entirely goes away. But at some point, a little, as we progress, as we grow, there is added to it another perspective. That perspective is, am I good enough? Am I being a good little boy in order to receive getting enough? Am I good enough? Am I smart enough? Am I well-behaved enough? Am I handsome enough? Am I thin enough? As this goes on in life, it turns into, am I educated enough? Is my job enough? Am I enough of a husband? Am I creating enough income? Am I good enough to create safety, to create security? So we have, first, am I getting enough? Then, am I good enough? And I call those the first story and the second story. First story, am I getting enough? The second story, am I good enough?
Both of them are very connected. It's all about the enough, right?
Yes, it's all about being enough. It's always about being enough. And for most people, they go from cradle to grave inside of these two stories. The two stories intermingle and they persist. And so to thread back a little bit, you asked me how it is that I came to write this. And I became increasingly aware that I was functioning inside both of these two stories all of the time. When I look back at my history, I could see the history of it, and I could begin to understand some of the history of it, which is a much longer conversation, and a juicy one, and an important one, and one that I am very willing to have with you and our listeners another time. I think it's a critical one. I think it's a really critical one. It starts even in utero. It starts with the kinds of thoughts and the kinds of feelings and the chemicals and emotion that course through our mother's bloodstream and our bloodstream at a time in utero when we are one biological unit. And whatever is going on in my mother's life is programmed right into my life. And I have no ability to make any discernment that she and I are different. And I take on those things. But that's a little, I'm throwing out a little hint of what is to come. We will rejoin at some point in the near future. I hope to have that conversation. But as I was saying, I looked back and I could see how getting enough was very much a part of my orientation. And then as I grew a little bit older, am I good enough was very much a part of my orientation. And then I began to understand that we even have things like the American dream, that this is also an expression of the second story. Am I good enough? If I can just work hard enough, and if I learn hard enough, and if I focus myself enough, then I can have enough. So I can be good enough, and I can create a success, and enough of a success. So this all is what I call the second story.
Right.
But there is another piece. There is something beyond the first story. There is something beyond the second story. There is the third story, and the third story is a tale of a destiny that is given but self-chosen. It is the tale of our souls and our higher selves work through us in this lifetime. And it gives me chills even to say that every time I think it and every time I say it. It is the story of our higher selves, expression of life in this lifetime. And it is characterized by not am I getting enough or am I good enough. It's characterized by the living of knowing I am enough. When we begin to calibrate towards that, everything changes.
I am enough.
I am enough. So there is some clutter that stands in the way of when one says, I am enough. Things come up. What comes up is remnants of the first story, remnants of the second story. I am enough. Yeah, but I didn't get enough. Yeah, but I'm not good enough. Yeah, but. Now, all of those yeah buts have nothing to do with the present moment.
Not the truth.
None of them have anything to do with the present. They are all ghosts of another time. They are all our own ghosts from earlier selves. They are all the aliveness that is trapped in memory that we immediately default back to.
Wait, okay. Aliveness that is trapped in memory. I just saw that when you said it. The aliveness that's trapped in memory. Wow.
Yes, you got that, didn't you? I can feel that something closed for you. What happened just there?
Yeah, it's like, wow. So all of that, you know, so our brains can understand it for all of us. That means like all that energy is tied up in these constructs of belief systems and stories we're telling ourselves instead of being here right now. Is that what you're saying in general?
That's exactly it. And what happened, what I experienced happening for you is something moved from being a concept of memory, a concept of past selves, something moved from being a concept to a living understanding that these are living aspects of ourselves that are trapped in a story of time and that we have access to, and by the understanding of that.
Yep.
It is not about now. This is about, I am hearing from a ghost of myself in another time. And now I can understand the situation of that past self. I understand why he, she has that worldview. I understand it because I was there, because it was me. And therefore, I have the compassion to be able to say, I love you. I hear you. I'm with you. I understand you. I will always be with you. I will never leave you. Even after you die, I will be with you. You can trust your little inner voice. You can trust me. It's not what you do, but who you are that I love.
Isn't that so true? I find that in finding that more and more in my primary relationship these days. It's really not about what my husband has done or does for me, or it's just he's who I love. I love him. It's so, and then to bring that back to ourselves as well. You know, like,
well, if you bring it back to yourself,
right?
When you bring it back to yourself, and every time you hear in contradiction to I am enough, you have for the first time a resource of love to bring to the ghost of yourself from whom you are hearing. And so you have for the first time elevated to a third story skill set for healing the first and second stories.
Yeah, it's almost like a reference point.
Yeah. And again, it's not a concept. It is living compassion. It is living self-love that is raised beyond concept into practice. So every time something happens and says, I'm enough, yes, but there was this. I hear you. I know why you are hurting. Mm-hmm. And I love you. And I will take care of you. My love will make you well. I know you don't feel enough. I will support you into feeling enough. But I feel enough.
I love that, because a lot of our course is experiential based. It's feminine wisdom. It's diving into the breath. It's integrating it into the body and the experience, not just staying in the mind construct of even writing a story. That's why, even though we're doing a lot of writing in this course, it's not a writing course. It's a transformational course to dive into the truth of your life.
Well, of course it makes sense, because one cannot heal in the head.
Right.
So the only way that what we're talking about makes sense is in the body. All feelings happen in the body. I was very late in life before I understood that. Most of what I experienced and what I labeled feelings in my life were thoughts about feelings, which is another way of talking about what anxiety is.
Would that be a second story?
That is being trapped in the second story. That's absolutely right. And that is worry about how effective I am in the second story, which is more second story. Mm. The second story does not happen in the body. It only happens in the head. So the body does not ruminate, am I getting enough? Am I good enough? It does actually, the body, if deprived of food, will respond. But the body does not ruminate about, am I good enough? Am I smart enough? Do I need another degree? Should I take another course? If I just did this, then I would be enough. The body does not ruminate. That is only happens in a mental virtual reality, in a head trip. And so when we breathe, we introduce chi into the system. And when we become more skilled at breath work and at breathing, we can reintroduce energy aliveness into the body and become reattuned to to our natural aliveness. And then when we hear from the first story and the second story, I'm not enough or I'm not good enough, when we say, this is not about now, It's not about my aliveness. Take a breath. Take a breath. Feel the aliveness. This is not about now. I hear you. I understand you. I love you. I will take care of you. Only from a place of being in relationship with our body aliveness is that meaningful to the part of ourselves that we are seeking to heal. Otherwise, it's a head trip talking to a head trip.
Right. Yeah. And that happens a lot. It's interesting. When you're talking about the third story, I have two questions. One, before we get into even value and how to really integrate. I mean, we're talking about integrating the third story right now by looking at the other stories and having compassion for them and being present to it. But my question is, can you give somewhat, it's almost a paradox, Barnett, because it's like, can you give somewhat of a mind construct, a definition of that third story, some qualities of it? But the paradox is that you experience that third story, right? You don't actually, you can't put it in a box and define it in your mind, correct?
It doesn't live in the mind. The mind, what happens very, very early, very, very early, we come into the world with a sense of an experience of our aliveness. Now, we are not consciously aware of that. And that's a function of our early development. Early development does not allow for us to be conscious of that. Unless you're like some kind of avatar that has come in conscious instantly. And they're certainly not running around all over the place. But we come in and we're very small and we are very in touch with our aliveness, with our embodiment. And when our chi is moving through us and we are very aware of those feelings and it feels good. Now, even if some of us come into life with very difficult circumstances, but even if we come in with the most loving parents and the most loving mom, so if my mom is holding me and I'm very little, and maybe she's on the phone, or maybe she has another thought, and maybe she has another child. As loving and as good as she is, no person can meet all of the needs of another human being. And so maybe she's distracted for a second, and immediately I feel a severing of the emotional attunement. And as an infant, I don't have the logical sensibility and the self-aware intellect to express it, but my whole being state is going, wow, I've just lost attunement. What happened? And I am thrown into a crisis. I'm thrown into an existential crisis at that point, if it is a severe severing of the attunement. But even if it's a little one, what happens is it is so painful to lose attunement that we shuttle out of the body and we shuttle up into the head. We shuttle up, we completely evacuate the body, and we go into the head, and we separate. We go into sort of a state of, it's almost like a little trance state, where I leave the body and I'm in a little trance as a way to take care of myself.
It's survival, right. Mm-hmm.
But if you look around at yourself and others, you will notice how often nowadays do we still separate and go off into a trance state where you look like if somebody goes in like in a deer in the headlights. So we learn how to evacuate the body and take up residence in a virtual reality called the head. And that over very quickly becomes the place where we reside. Now, in the head, you do not have any body awareness. There is not the experience of personal aliveness, energetic aliveness in the head that you have when you take 10, 15 deep a charged breath. You're going to take 5, 10, 15 charged breaths, your whole body begins to vibrate, correct?
Correct.
And you begin to feel a sense of peace, and the internal chatter, mind chatter, begins to subside, and you have begin to become attuned with your personal well-being. That does not happen if you live in the head. So it is only when you begin to restore a relationship with an embodied presence that you begin to take up this arrest from this place of arrested development. You begin to take up our life's birthright as an embodied being. Now the third story has an embodied state from which to express itself. It is only from the embodied state that one can heal the parts of us that live in our head. You're not going to heal the parts of us that live in our head from another part that lives in the head.
Yeah, it's integration, right? So with that said, with the third story, do you have one or two tools that you could possibly share with our community and with the course participants around how to keep, obviously, breathing, you said, how to keep moving back into that integrative state?
The first one in my life, in my own practice, is the breath. Because we fragment so quickly, and we are so used to living inside of fragmentation that we don't even notice that we're fragmented and that we're not in the body. We don't even notice. We only notice it when it is the most dire crisis. But we don't notice, for the most part, that we are not that our breath is very shallow. If I said to our listeners to pause and become aware of your body, is there any body aliveness? Does your body aliveness extend into your limbs? Does it extend into your lower extremities? I would guess that very, very few of us can immediately tune into that right now. So one way to do it, and if we all want to do it right now, any opportunity that I can take to do a little breath is a good opportunity. So let's all for a moment put your attention on your collarbone. You know those little soft places right, I guess it's just above the collarbone. I'm not sure if that's called the clavicle. I'm not really sure what it's called. But there's a little soft places right above the sharp points on your collarbone. So if you put your thumb and your forefinger on each one, we're going to breathe into that. This is not belly breathing. This is not deep, relaxed breathing that charges the sympathetic system, nervous system. This is not yogic, that kind of yogic breathing. This is breathing that is charged breathing, breathing high into the upper part of the lung. So we're going to breathe right into those points behind our fingers. These are deep breaths. Open mouth breaths. So when I say breathe, I want you to breathe deeply, fully, right in behind those points on your finger. And we'll do 5 breaths together. You ready? 1, 2, 3. Follow me. I want to hear you all. One more hold. And just keep breathing gently. And become aware, Kelly, you'll be the spokesperson for all of us. What are you experiencing right now?
I'm experiencing, like, my eyes opened and it felt like I woke up for the day.
And now, and slow down, and do you feel any warmth in your head or any part of your body?
In my heart, in my chest area.
In your chest area, and do you experience any tingling or any little buzzing?
Actually, in my toes. It just shot straight down into my toes. And I don't even know if you can hear it in my voice. Five of those breaths made me clearer.
So you're only 3 or 4 or 5 breaths away from a greater sense of who you are. Now, we don't have to do this now, but later, if any of our listeners want to do another 5 breaths, another 10 breaths, another 15 breaths, now you might get a little dizzy. You're getting dizzy because we don't have these channels open. Sometimes I hear people, sometimes old-style medical-type people will say to me, well, you're super oxygenating. That's a relative term. It's super oxygenating because we are not used to having so much body aliveness. And so the system shuts down. But very, very quickly, in 10 breaths, in 20 breaths, if you do this 3-4 times, if in 3 or 4 times, your body wants the aliveness. It wants to wake up, and you won't feel dizzy. If you feel dizzy, slow down. You can look out into your world and you can identify colors and objects, black floor, brown shoes, blue sofa, white t-shirt. That will help ground you. You just want to ground the energy. Take a breath and notice what's happening in your body. The first stop for the third story is to become grounded in your body. And then from that place, we begin to have an entirely new relationship with our thinking and with our strategizing and with our trying to outthink life, which is the second story, and with our desperation for looking for safety and security in life, which is our first story. Things all become very different when they are tucked inside the body. And that is the beginning of how the third story develops. It happens inside a superseding body awareness that holds both our thinking and holds our being. And for those of us that are looking to make changes in our life and are looking to create wonders like new relationships and more affluence and are practicing with things like law of attraction, unless we are in our body, we cannot begin to approach the bounty that is the birthright of every human being. It does not exist in the head. So if you want to see dramatic changes, begin to explore these things from an embodied state. Put the clutch in, put the pin in on all your other work. Begin to develop a relationship through breath with the body, and then you can return to your other work, and you will not simply see results. You will see dramatic results.
Wow. Talk about powerful tools. I have this really, maybe it's a hope and a wish that I can continue this conversation with you about the third story for our community.
It is not only I give you my word that I am always available for you, and I'm always willing to discuss this. And anytime you invite me, I will be here.
Thank you so much, Barnett. I really appreciate this. And I think for all our participants, this is such a powerful bonus to this course that I hope that each of the participants will listen to even before they begin the course. And I'm going to encourage them to do that so that they can experience this information from a more integrated state and really apply the tools that you've shared. So I really appreciate your time, Burnett. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kelly. I love you. And I hope that everybody listening is breathing.
Breathe. Thank you, Barnett. Bye, everyone. Thank you.